Hi, this is Miguel Gulen. You're listening to an Around the Corner podcast. Today is Tuesday, July the 8th. Let's take a moment to look back in time to June 2008. That's just last month. It seems like an eternity ago, especially after the NEC 2008 conference and how everything has played out with that. The Texas CTO Clinic took place in June. CTO is, of course, Chief Technology Officer. And we had Chief Technology Officers from all over the state of Texas attend, as well as Cheryl Abshire from Louisiana. I can never say her school district affiliation. I think it's Calcasieu. Not sure exactly, though. But everyone came over, and they had a lot of exciting sessions at the Texas CTO Clinic. And it really wasn't that there was a lot of sessions, but that they were really quality sessions. And the folks that were sharing were people that we wanted to listen to. One of those sessions was facilitated by Vicki Bingham. She's a former technology director or coordinator, and she facilitated a session between Gray Salata from Austin Independent School District, Karen Fuller from Klein ISD, and Lenny Chad from Katy ISD. The conversation was about successful bond campaigns, making the case for technology. And when I went into that presentation, I was really hoping to learn how to successfully launch a bond campaign, even though chances are, as a director of instructional technology in a large urban school district, I'm probably not going to be doing the launching of a bond campaign. It'll probably be the superintendent and the school board and everybody else, and I'll provide some assistance. But I thought it was still important for me to know this and be aware of the process. And I left that session feeling like I really had a better handle on running a successful bond campaign. And for me, I think a bond campaign really comes down to communication and getting the information out to all stakeholders, as well as allowing them a voice and making sure that you amplify their voices so that no one feels left out of the process, so that everybody has the same idea of what they're trying to accomplish, which is really to enhance teaching, learning, and leading in our schools. Karen Fuller had some excellent suggestions, which I won't elaborate in this intro, but you can also find some of my notes for what she had to say in this podcast. And Lenny Chad from Katy also shared one of the, I guess, major obstacles that school districts face when pursuing a bond, that is a well-organized opposition group. And it was just fascinating to hear some of the struggles that they've encountered and how to overcome those. The problems that we all tend to encounter in public schools are exciting because they give us the opportunity to discover and craft solutions. And the more people that we can bring into the process of solving a problem or overcoming an obstacle that's come up, the better. So let's go ahead and jump in and listen to Vicki Bingham. She's going to introduce everybody and get us started. I like the way Vicki arranged the format of the panel presentation. She'd ask questions and they'd go through it, and she also would invite the audience to ask their particular questions. So I know it seems pretty standard for a panel, but I've seen other panels that haven't been as well organized as the one Vicki did. So thanks to Vicki, and thanks to the Texas CTO group, especially Alice Owen, who's I believe the reigning president or a person responsible for facilitating and taking care of everything. Also, thank you to Katy ISD for hosting this event. It was very well organized, and in terms of, you know, here's all the rooms you get to go to, and everything seems sort of just work really well. So all that, just making sure that things work really well, requires a lot of advanced planning, as I know. So I'm grateful to them as for doing that and putting all that work into the effort.
So, as a way of introduction, I'm Greg Saladay. I'm from Austin ISD. Our school district is approximately 83,000 kids, and about 60% of them are being reduced lunch. Both those populations are increasing about 1% a year. Technology-wise, I run the technology department except for the instructional piece. I have about 110 folks working for me, about 55 folks working on the infrastructure side, about 55 folks working on the application and data side. And on the infrastructure side, we run our own network. We own our own fiber. We're configured in a ring kind of concept with 2 gigabit to each campus, and the ring is interconnected with 6 gigabits. We have about 40,000 computers, have 171 cell phones, which is about 10,000 telephones, 400 servers, and wireless at all but about 30 campuses, and 55 folks on that. On the application side, we're at SASE XP district. We'll be replacing that in about 2 years because end of life is summer of 2010. We use IFIS for our finance and HR systems. We're in the process of putting in a new gradebook, which should be running here next week for summer school. We're using Gradespeed. We're in the process of putting in a new data warehouse. We're using Tetra data. We're in the process of finalizing a system or a project to put a document management system in, and that will probably come around this fall. So, you know, just to set the context, that's why we need a technology bond to support this and pay for this. And just a little bit on our bond history, we've done 7 bonds in the recent history, 89, 90, 96, 2002, 2004, and most recently 2008. Of those bonds, well, I guess we can talk a little bit later about the content of bonds. So I'll just stop there. That's kind of what Austin's all about, and I'm sure that probably is similar to a lot of y'all in the district.
That's great, Greg. Okay, and Karen Fuller. I've been bonding from the school district. I've been in the district for 2 years. The district is approximately 43,000 students, 42,800. We have 40 campuses, 38 ISD county district number campuses, and alternative campuses that are there. We're connected in the district by a fiber network. We actually lease our fiber network. We have our network is a gigabit backbone with 100 to the desktop. We have deployed. We support about 22,000 machines in the district. We have 1 high school program campus that is a 1-to-1 campus, an intermediate campus that's a 1-to-1 campus, and we'll be opening Klein Oak this year as a 1-to-1 campus. That's one of our 4 high schools. We have a technology standard baseline initiative in our district. This was started with the 04 bond, and we have put electronic whiteboards, which is a talking starboard, a document camera, data projector, and e-instruction for devices in all the classrooms, first and eighth grade. We don't have the polling devices in the kindergarten classrooms, but they have what we call the technology baseline initiative with 4 computers in every classroom and a teacher presentation session in every classroom. In the 9th and 12th grade classrooms, we've deployed that all the way to the 10th grade and the full curriculum classrooms. All of the teachers, we have voice over IP in our network. We're unique in a way that we actually have wireless voice over IP running over our wireless network. All of our campuses, the teachers have a wireless voice over IP handset that is portable, they can carry outside, they can carry it to the lunchroom so that they can make phone calls. And we've had a challenge of making the wireless voice over IP function. We were using it under an older technology, the crystal technology. We're now deploying it over the wireless standard 2.11 AUG infrastructure. By the end of this year, all 38 campuses will be networked with the wireless connectivity. We're upgrading the phone system and our data network. our voice runs over the media frequency, and our data runs over the AM frequency. As we deploy new campuses, we will integrate and migrate to the AM frequency for the wireless. We're supported by 160 servers, everything is centralized. We just built a new network operations center that's about a 2,000 square foot network operations center where everything runs back to. All of our phone system is centralized. We come into one location and it's distributed throughout the entire district. My department has, right now we currently have 40 staff members, and we take care of all of them. As we call it, we're the break it, fix it group. If it's plugged up for electricity, you can hardly get a call. My department covers all of the IT infrastructure, all the telephone infrastructure, all of the data, the security infrastructure. We just took over the responsibility of monitoring all the video cameras that we do for security jobs, security access, those type of things. Anything that connects to the network, we have our fingerprints and how that's configured and connects to the district. The instructional department actually reports directly to the curriculum and instruction area. They report to the assistant superintendent. We have a student information systems department, which currently needs 2 or 3 SMS in their student information system, and we use Finance Plus as our financial system. We are also in the process of trying to figure out what we're doing for data warehouse and some of the other items that are coming up, that, so we can, as they were talking this morning, get the data in the time and make sure the teachers can use it for the classroom.
Okay. I'm Lenny Shabb with KDISD. I've been with the district about 5 years. KDISD is a fast growth school district, so bond issues are a way of life for us. We have about 55,000 kids. We have wireless at every one of our campuses. We have 3 desktops in every classroom. We're in the process of deploying smart board technology. Looking at that being one of the major components for our next bond election. I have about 110 people reporting to my department. We have responsibility for everything that's like client, everything that plugs in the wall we own. We also are in charge of the print shop and all of the printing copiers, and also have the paint department that reports to. We have replaced our student management system within the last 2 years. We replaced our gradebook system within the last 3 years. We have an RFP out on the street right now to replace our finance system. You guys talk about end of life for years. We are at end of life. It's on my support. The vendor has abandoned us. So the sense of urgency, we finally got the school board to recognize, kind of something we need to think about. So we have an RFP out on the street right now. Our challenge really is being a fast growth school district and making sure that we want to implement the latest technology in the new school, but you don't want to abandon the old schools. And so that's our challenge, is making sure that anything we're doing new, that we're also taking into consideration our old campuses. Because the parents out in those communities tend to get kind of feisty when they go to the new campuses and see everything. So, typical instruction, Microsoft, we have 30,000 computers, very similar to the rest of the people on the panel, so I'm not going to go into a lot of detail on that. So, we'll get into the bond discussion.
Great. You may be able to tell from the handout a little bit, which is really mostly just an outline for you. The way we'd like to format our time together, they're on the back table. Those are from yesterday, so they won't be really useful. We've got 3 main questions. I'm going to pose to the presenters the question of really the typical components that they include in their bond campaign. The second question is going to be how they build community awareness and engagement, and the third one, then what kind of obstacles or pain points they ran into, kind of opposition, and how they've addressed that. So I'm going to ask you, I think I don't want to cut any of you on content. If we can take Mark's questions in about 5 to 6 minutes, which is shaving off a minute from what we were planning. And we'll have about a 10-minute question period at the end of each. So 3 question periods, hopefully, so you can insert questions you've had that might be related to what they've spoken about or might be outside those 3 questions. Okay. So our first one. No secrets to anyone now. Start with the components that you typically include in a bond campaign.
Like I said, being a fast growth school district, we go for bond elections every 4 years. We open up campuses every single year. This year, we're going to be opening up 4 campuses. So Our biggest issue from a technology perspective is the majority of the bond issues are for new campuses. And so anything that you add beyond that typically becomes the flashpoint. So what we've spent a lot of time doing is really establishing what is the baseline for technology that needs to be a component of the bond election. And that's our replacement cycles. And so within our community, we spend a lot of time and have spent a lot of time talking about retrofit and life cycle replacement, those kind of things, brick and mortar to the technology department. PC replacement, laptop replacement, server replacement, and network retrofits. All of those are standard brick and mortar in any bond election that the public sees, and they understand that. The way that we're going to keep up with technology is we need to replace our computers. We switched this last bond election to a 6-year life cycle replacement for our PCs and our laptops. The reason we did that is so much of the work is moving to the web that the horsepower on the desktops is somewhat, it's not as critical as it has been in the past when they're running everything from the desktop. So we feel that our computers can last 6 years, and that bought us about $7 million that we can shave off of the bond election. Our servers are on a 3-year life cycle replacement, and that's going to be reduced because we really embrace the virtualization concept. So that's going to go down. And then our network retrofit, you know, as you're adding projectors and smart boards, your cabling configuration for your campuses, they change. And so you need to be able to, in your campuses, allow for this cabling retrofit that needs to go on. That is my major component when I get up in front of the public that I talk about. Now, there are other technology things, and one of the things that we learned was we had a bond issue that failed. Our last bond issue failed the first time. And I think it failed because of a number of things. One of them was technology was in front, talking about a lot of projects that didn't have the CNI, the curriculum slant to it. So one of the things that we learned was the public understands PC retrofit and lifecycle, and they want me to talk about that. But when you get up and talk about smart boards or distance learning, we put CNI in front of them, and we let CNI talk about the relevance to education, and that got us out of the spotlight, and it got the public to not view it as a technology initiative. The public started viewing it as this is a curriculum requirement. So when we talk about the components, from us moving forward, we're going to have the brick and mortar PC lifecycle, server lifecycle, network lifecycle. But then when we move beyond that, for instance, smart boards or distance learning or any of those other initiatives, a data warehouse, we're going to have representatives from those various user departments get up and speak to why it's important and how it affects the kids. So that's kind of our component of 70,000.
Okay, good. Greg?
Okay, as far as bonds in AISD, traditionally they've mainly been geared towards infrastructure, towards new buildings, towards new classrooms, towards enhancements to air conditioning. We even had a bond, the 2002 bond was just aimed at mold and remediation for water damage. In 1996, we had a bond, and it had technology in it, but the technology that was in that bond was geared towards wiring and cabling, which you would normally associate with it. So, fast forwarding to the present, this 2008 bond, we had technology, but it was technology that you would, it was for technology that normally you wouldn't consider a long-term, long-lead kind of infrastructure kind of component. We're talking about computers, laptops, and things like that, things with a 4-year life cycle, 5-year life cycle, things that you normally wouldn't finance over a 20 or 25 year period. And I think later on we have some questions about getting into that. But what was really driving us, and I think probably is really important for all here, is the school funding mechanism in Texas is kind of driving school districts to put these kinds of items into bonds because the MNO tax structure is capped at $1.17, and you can only use MNO money for salaries and things like that. IMS, you have a sense there, but you can't use that on salaries. So that's a whole set of money there that you can tap that you can buy these kinds of things. So kind of as a concept, just a little history here. I started talking with a superintendent about 3 years ago about getting a tax just for technology, so we get an M&O tax, 1 cent a year, 2 cents a year, whatever, go right into technology. And when we started going through the planning and this whole M&O thing, the tax cap and the law changes, it became apparent that we couldn't do this with M&O. We have to have a technology bond. And then we said, we'll get a technology mini bond. We started putting the numbers together, 120 million or something like that. The numbers got real high. He wanted to keep it low. And he said, well, we go to 200, why don't we add some other stuff into it? So then he opened it up, let the facility guys put some stuff in. All of a sudden, there's 400 or 500. And they said, well, we got to start taking stuff out. So when it's all over and done with, the technology bond had zero technology in it. And we're just, you know, so we're back to the M&O. And so there's no way we can get M&O for this. So for about half a year, we're sitting there, hey, how are we going to do this? And then the last second, well, go ahead and go to the bond committee and present your case. And then I got chastised by the bond committee. So why are you coming in at such a late date? You know, and of course, the, you know, the whole history is this is a technology bomb, no technology. Anyways, we got the technology in there about I'd say a total of 70 million. About 38 million of that are things that you would normally not have in bond. The other things, such as projectors, we're putting projectors and audio systems in each classroom. That stuff, I guess you would probably have under a bond. So as we go through this, I lost myself.
You're too young for that. That happens to me.
So we went ahead and we put this bond package together. Got a hold of the bond committee, and every employee approved it, and we kind of went on in life. And I think the next question I'll get into is where that is. We'll just stop right there.
Good deal. Karen, Klein is considered a fast growth district as well. We're not as fast as growing as Cambridge. We have about 1,700 students a year. Part of our bond is mostly what Katie's doing is for facilities. We, the last one that got passed, we expect to build 6 campuses in 4 years. So the majority of the bond is for our campuses to also renovate buildings, to just be buildings that we have the existing campuses, to add additional seats to our high school campuses, to add additional seats to some of our other facilities. We will, as a part of the bond, the infrastructure part of technology is almost a given. And you've got to have that. So that's a part of when we build a building, technology is a part of it. It's not truly separated, it's a part of what we build. When we get ready to connect the building to the network, that's a part of what we plan when we plan on the building opening up. One of the things that Klein started in 2004 is to integrate technology as a part of what we're doing in the bond. So our bonds do include technology. Probably the most unique thing about the last bond that passed that is different from what the other two districts are doing is one of the things that Klein started in 2004 was a one-to-one initiative with bond funds. That's, I think, where in some ways we've been more public with how the bond money is being used. And with the new bond that was passed, part of what the 04 bond money fund, part of what the 08 bond money fund down the road is going to be providing a PC-type device, tablet-type device for the students at our secondary level. That's where our one-to-one initiatives have come in. Part of that is being paid for. Actually, all of that is being paid for with bond funds. So our bond money is used for basically everything Katie talked about, probably everything that Austin and I was talking about, but what separates us now is we're using it to also pay for a more integrated technology use. And our curriculum department is the one that supports that and talks about that. Our job in IT is to make sure that it's working, make sure the network's functioning, make sure the computers are there, and all of that to begin when we purchase the device. We're looking at a 5-year life cycle of our devices.
I want to see how your 6-year life cycle works, because my CFO keeps telling me we've got to make them last 10 years. It was really interesting hearing what the legislature said was needed with technology funding. So the bonds are helping us get, and that helps us get to where we're at, to replace our shelters, to keep our network infrastructure up to date, to keep our cell phone systems up to date. That our community is in very bad condition.
Terrific. Let's take a moment for some questions. Questions you have about components that go into a bond campaign, or feel free to ask questions that you don't think we're going to address them on our questions. Yes.
When you build technology into the cost of a new school, do you do it on a per square foot basis, or do you say, here's what we need, it's a flat amount that's a part of the cost of the school?
For us, it's a flat amount. Here's what it's going to be, and it's pretty much the same for every high school, for every junior high. And we don't have a separate line item for technology in new campuses. It's the cost of the new campus.
Correct. So I was just wondering, is that on a square foot basis, or what it is?
We have a blueprint.
Okay.
A fundamental blueprint that says, for every high school, here's what the classroom configuration is, and that's what we set out. One thing that I do want to mention is that they talk about technology and bond elections, and do you want to pay for PCs for 20 years? That's something that came up early on from the public, and we had our CFO get up and talk about that. And you pay off bonds in different increments, and so he really spent a lot of time talking to the public that said, no, we're not paying for 20 years for a PC, we're paying for it in 5. And you know, as you pass your bond election, you have to come up with a financial forecast that says, here's when you're spending, so they know when they need to sell bonds. He tied that back to, so when we're making our purchases for our computer equipment, and then here's when we're going to pay it off. Because that's one of the things that jumps up early on for anybody who wants to be a naysayer for your bond election. And the technology component is, why do you want to pay 20 years for computer equipment?
So are you purchasing your technology with 5-year bonds then?
Well, ours are the 20-year bonds, but he shows when he's going to pay them off,
okay.
Right? And we are paying for them in 5 years,
okay.
Right?
And
that was one of the lightning rods that jumped up. And
right.
So our CFO really spent a lot of time going through just fundamentals of how a bond issuance works and how you repay it. And I think that's a huge step for public acceptance. So
I have kind of a different take on that, because we ran into the same issue as far as the community and others being upset about spending all this money. And our CFO got in talking, kind of a different picture emerged, because when you sell the bonds, and I kind of had this discussion as well, the 20-year or 25-year bond, you sell it to whoever buys them is stuck with that bond. So even if you pay, say, computers, and you say, well, I'm gonna buy these computers, I'm gonna pay those computers off in 5 years, it really doesn't matter, because whoever owns that bond is getting paid over 20 years. So it's just kind of a smoke and mirrors, you know, and that's how he described it to the people that asked that question.
It's a bad way to explain it.
but it's important because, you know, the truth when it comes out, because you really want their support, and we'll get into that a little bit later on. The community has to support you. The real issue comes down is there's really no other way to buy these computers. And so in most school districts, you're going to find yourself in this situation, because in the MNL money, you need to reserve it for the pay raises. And for us, for example, we're at $1.10, $1.11, and you can only go to $1.17. Well, you only have 7 cents of taxing authority. Well, 7 cents, for at least for Austin, 1 cent is equivalent to 1% pay raise. So a 3% pay raise means you have to go for a 3 cent tax increase. So that's we've kind of looked at it different, kind of presented it differently, and most of the people out there, they understand that, well, you know, we don't want to spend 20 year money to buy computers, but we need the computers, and there's no other way to do it. And just to your original question, as far as we're kind of like lending here, we have what's called an educational specification. It's laid out and says, this is how many drops Ethernet drops we have in each classroom. This is, you know, how many printers you're going to have in each classroom. This is how many computers you're going to have in each classroom. There's an educational specification for elementary school. There's one for middle school, and there's one for high school. So all this is laid out, and there's adjustments made for different sizes. For example, a 1,500 person middle school will have more computer labs than a
Yeah, I have two questions. One is related to the distinguishing between what's MNO and what is bond related. When you buy replacements, how do you handle the support and maintenance on those? If you have a contract to support those computers, how do you handle that with the bond? And also when you consider systems like document management, where you may have to go back and scan maybe a lot of documents already, that's going to probably take a lot of labor. Do you include that cost as part of...
One of the things you can do with a bond is you can pre-purchase as many years of maintenance as you want. So typically what we do, if it's hardware, we'll buy it in 3 years of standard maintenance, because, you know, beyond that, it's kind of a waste of money. For software or anything like that, we'll purchase 5-6 years of maintenance, and then it doesn't have to hit your MNO budget at all. So you can do that with bond money. You can purchase as many years of maintenance as you want. And that's typically what we've done on the software side. So that helps you out a lot. From a resource standpoint, you can also build in time to implement. And in a bond election, it's all centered around implementation. And once you say you go live, you can't use bond money to support it or maintain it. So it's all on how you package your bond verbiage. So if you're going to implement something, you can, as an implementation cost, use bond money. And for a document management system, that's what I would do. I would build in this all this pre-work that I would have to do to get the system to what I would consider production ready, and you can use bond funds for that.
We do the same thing. We make sure it's implementation. The bond is your implementation. Mm-hmm. Implementing it, you're making, doing the pilots, whatever you need to do, that's your bond. And then once you get it in there, sustaining it is where you're going to get funds.
The only place where you really kind of run a gray area is in training. And you really have to spend time talking to your bond counsel, your legal counsel, on the verbiage that you put in, because training becomes kind of sexual. They really don't like to use bond funds for training. And so it's all in how you package it.
You had a second?
Oh, my second question,
is there a reasonable amount of a percentage of technology versus the bond that's typically acceptable?
I'll give you an example, and this is just philosophical, so nobody can hold me to these numbers. All right, our next bond election, $700 million of it is for simply adding facilities. Okay, so that's new construction. So if you look at what technology and everybody else wants, we'll be approaching $1 billion bond issue potential. Okay, so when you say a component of it, there is no magic percentage point out there. What you need to talk about, and I think we'll get into it in our third bullet, is you have to have an awareness in your community on what they value in the education of their kids. Because then it becomes a very easy thing for them to pay for. When they don't understand beyond new construction, then it becomes one of these sacrificial lambs, right? We understand we have to build a facility because otherwise our kids are going to be stacked and hoarded. So we'll pay for that. Anything beyond that, I don't want to pay for. So you have to make them aware of why it's important. And then there are some groups out there forming. He has one of them that will absolutely oppose you in very nasty, very ugly ways. And they were successful in making a bond election fail for us. And so we really had to become much more politically aware, and we had to campaign about the market more so than anybody else, I think. So I'm going to jump into it a little bit because that organization kind of spread over to the percentage part isn't out there. It's community awareness and acceptance and getting them to decide what they want for their kids.
Let me ask you a question.
let me ask you to hold your questions if you can to the next segment, and we'll take the rest in the next one. Let's get some more talking on the table, and we're talking about community awareness. Let's go with that one next. And Graham, I'm going to ask you to start on this one. What have you done to really build community awareness and engagement?
First of all, I got to say, I'm getting more out of this than
I've taken a lot of it
from Karen and Lynn. Well, community engagement, that's probably, that's the key to the whole farm. And I think for Austin anyways, I think they have a very good method of a process to go through to get bonds out on the street and passed. And I think it all stems back to 1989, when there was a bond package that they threw together in a real short period of time, about $150 million, and tried to put this thing together in about 4 months, and it just blew up on them, and it didn't pass. And then they went back and they said, well, what did they do wrong? Well, they didn't communicate. They didn't work with the community. And so this thing, that failure ended up, every bond since then passed, and usually by really good margins. So what did they do? What kind of processes did they put in place? Well, the first thing is you engage the key members of the community, and you get them, and you get the commerce folks involved, you get the key members. You put together a citizens bond committee, and a citizens bond committee, again, you get the key people, you get people that are very involved in campuses, and you get them to go on this committee, and then that committee works with a broad set of guidance that's given by the board and the superintendent. We want, for example, this last one, we want the bond around $200 million, and we want it to be stuff that has to happen, not immediate kind of needs that need to be addressed as soon as possible. And so that guidance, and the bond committee went out and they started calling in facilities folks and other folks to, you know, give briefings, what do you need, what's the impetus behind it. And so they do that. Then they kind of put together what they recommend as a bond, and then they come back and present it to the board, and then the board holds hearings. And the hearings, we have several of these, and the community can come in and address what's on the bond, say, well, we want this or we don't want this, and then it goes back to the committee and they make the adjustments. So I think using that process and engaging these members has worked out very well. Additionally, it doesn't hurt if there's some specific special interest kind of thing that is a big community item, and it looks like you have community support. It doesn't hurt having something like that. In the case of Austin, technology is always a special interest, and seems to carry well in Austin anyway. And also the arts. So this last one, there was an additional item for a fine arts center, which brought out a whole lot of movers and shakers in the community that could go out and really push it. And then you have PTA groups that, well, I need my science classrooms, and all of a sudden, you know, they have the whole poetry, and it's, you know, pretty soon they talk to everybody in the city, and you get a good turnout. So, if I can say one thing, communication and community awareness and involvement of the community. You've got to have that to really move forward and pass it on.
What strategies do you define? A lot of the sentiment that you just spoke about, we put a committee together, the different departments presented their needs of what needed to happen. We did some extensive assessments of the existing facilities before we brought the committee together. We had a consulting group to come in and work with us on evaluating our buildings, making sure that we were making the right decisions on any renovations we were going to propose and that we needed to do. We've got everything together, we've got our needs together before we brought the committee together. And the committee was all different types of community members. We had some school district representatives, we had students on the committee. We involved every aspect of the community we could possibly involve.
and we meet with them. And the meetings we can present the needs, we present where we saw our greatest needs before we moved to Ogden to help us continue educating students in our community. Through that, Dr. Kane, our superintendent, was very, I don't know what his calendar looked like, but I know that he probably did not have a free day during the whole bond campaign. There was even scheduled for him to go to Bunko games and to talk to community members in Bunko games. And so now I'm guessing where's next Bunko game was going to be at. He was so instrumental in getting the word out, making sure the right type of information was going out, trying to make sure the misnomers that were out there were truly people getting the right, correct information, that the people you had opposing it would kind of exaggerate some of the things that were told in meetings. One of the things that I brought with me and put out on the table were we make sure we were available. We advertised on our website, not really advertising, but we made sure that the right information was out there for the community to have access to. Was most important. We provided many ways for people in the community to vote. We had forums at each of our high school campuses where community members could come in and ask questions, and we had people there that, if Dr. Kane could not answer the questions, we had the representatives there that could answer the questions for the concerns that they had. Communication is the most important thing you can do, and involvement of the people in your community, and getting the right stakeholder involved. Coming from the country, one of the things that I always tell my folks is we've got to have the bell cow. If you don't know what I'm talking about, the bell cow, if you grew up on a farm, there's one cow that everybody follows. And typically you put a bell on that cow, and that's how you know where all the herd is, because you hear that cow with that bell ringing. So you need to get your bell cows involved. And make sure they may not be the most experienced or the most knowledgeable in the area that you're trying to get passed, but if you can involve them in the communication, and you can involve them in what you're doing and what your plans are. But the most important thing is to, even after the bond is over, don't stop that communication. You've got to continue that communication. You've got to continue those meetings. You've got to continue those meetings. And you've got to continue getting the information out of, this is what your bond money has done for us. You've got to, as the legislature said this morning, brag. If you don't brag on what it's done and how their money is making a difference in what you're doing, the next time you get ready to do the bond, then, you know, where our money goes is making a difference. So one of the things that we're doing now is the bond is passed, but now we've got to keep the information flowing, keep that correct information there. So communication and community involvement is one of the key factors in getting the right people there to answer their questions correctly. That is also something that I would like to say.
I didn't tell you, but I live in your district, and you do a great job. Lenny, what about it?
We have the same committees bringing together. The committee, they are the ones who decide the bond package, so of course they're going to advocate, right? But our biggest issue is getting that advocacy beyond the group and voter apathy. Right? Voter apathy will kill you. If your district, if most of them are happy, they don't go out and vote for bond elections. It's the naysayers who go out and they pose your biggest issue. If you can get just your staff members to vote, that bond would sell. Okay? If you can get your campuses and your teachers to go and all of them vote yes, your bond election would pass every single time. So what we spent time doing is focusing on community, that's important, getting the word out beyond the group. Katie started what we call Leadership KDISD, and we bring in a group of about 60 people, and it's a year-long commitment. And this group meets once a month, and they go through every asset, every department in the school district. The goal being, in 12 months' time, they now understand what it takes to run a school district. One of the months is a technology presentation. We come in and we give a dog and pony show, right, on all of the great technology, the smart boards and distance learning. And it's one of the most well-received sessions out of the entire year. We take that show on the road, right, and we go out and we get with PTAs, and I get with all of the mothers, and we show this great use of technology. So we're building the advocacy out there. The statement on doing it long before a bond election happens is absolutely true, right? It's something that you need to keep going all of the time. this leadership KDISD group we've had in place for 7 years now, they also become the voice for why you need what you need. They're out talking about what we need to do. One of the things that we have to get much better on, and that's what I said earlier, we have to get our employees to understand the need for the bond. Okay? And that starts with your principal, right? So we're spending a lot of time with our principal. Here's what's in the bond election, here's why it's in here, and here's why it's important, and here's what you need to do, right? Because it's important for us to not only say, here's what it is, but here's what we expect you to do. Your principals have the most influence out in your community. They're the ones who your parents are going to listen to. So you need that group of people being the biggest advocate for your bond election, okay? And we had lots of opportunities where we had open forums, and we had 10 people show up, or 6 people show up. So you've got to figure out in your community what your mechanism to get your information out. And it's going to change depending on what kind of a bond election you're going to have. And so that's why you tie in these people like Leadership KDIC. That's why you bring your principals in. They know the mechanism that's going to work for communication, all right? And that's the group that you need to get out there. For us on our next bond election, we're going to focus on our employees, right? Because like I said, if every one of them voted yes, the bond election would pass every single time. So we're going to spend time with our employees and with our principals saying, here's what we're expecting you to do, all right? And we're going to take that roadshow on even more so. We're going to get out with PTAs. When the PTAs get together, we're going to bring smart boards in. We're going to bring distance learning in. Because when you wow the mommies, then you're getting power, right? Because they're the ones that go out and talk, and they're the ones who are saying, here's what it is. And so we're doing all of those kind of things. We have a bond review committee. Once that bond election passed, we now have a review committee that comes in every 3 months, and we say, here's what we said we were going to spend our money on, and here's what we're spending our money on. And here's the timetable we said we were going to spend it, and here's how we're spending it. And so this group is coming together, and they were members of the bond committee themselves. But they come in, and now they're the voice going out saying, yeah, they are spending it, and they're doing it in a time frame. If you drive around the district, you'll see signs, your bond dollars at work, right? And it goes back to what you were saying. People need to see, here is what we're doing with your bond dollars when they drive by new construction. When they go into campuses, there's sheets that say, here's what we've done with your bond dollars. Here are the improvements that go on. Because remember what I said earlier, our challenge is not our new campuses, it's our older campuses. And the renovations that we're doing, and making that part of the community feel like, yes, you are still valued, and the district is still going to pay money for you. So we have to build that alliance up. Okay.
A lot of good information.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, I was curious. Have you split any of your bonds into multiple choices? Because like we had one that was, we knew it was going to be a little controversial, and we were afraid it would kill the whole thing. So we split it out, and indeed, that part didn't pass. So I was just curious if you've done that or not.
Yes, we had separate referendums. In this last election, we had 3. One was mainly education-related, which had a technology piece in it. One was mainly facilities and upgrades by environmental issues. And then the third one was the Communities of Fine Arts Center.
And I should know this, but did they all pass?
They all passed. No. All veterans have
yeah. Awesome. You have the slayers, have you?
We're being pressured. The oppositional group that I talked about, they are really pressing us hard to do that. And our biggest concern, again, is it would be 3 sections. It would be the new schools, the renovation campuses, and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm in a new area where development's going to go on, of course I want. And I really don't care about anything else because I know I'm getting everything new.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so I'm going to have all the new technology. I'm going to have everything. So I'll support that and to hell with everything else.
Right.
And if I'm at a renovation campus, that's the one I'm going to worry about. And again, it's kind of the same deal. I'm still going to get the new things. It's all those other things that fall to the side that you just, that's what I worry about putting a line on and vote on.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we had a better sense for where our community was and do they really understand all the various elements and the importance, and the community really has stepped up and said, here's what we value and here's what we want in education for our kids, I think you could go to that point. Katie isn't there yet, and it's very much a divided community at this point. So a line item, I think, would be disastrous for a lot of people.
but yet you find that overall, if you combine them, you get enough support to pass.
We do, because we can get that consensus line, you know, here's why we're doing what we're doing, and we break it up in new campuses and renovations and technology, and, you know, here's what we're doing in technology, we do it in the buses, and so, you know, you get each person getting up there and talking about, here's why we need what we're doing. And we tie it all back to growth and how that growth, you know, it just spirals out. And if we don't build new campuses, then we're putting porticles out and it just, you know, daisy chains itself out. Our community understands that and they accepted it. I think going to that line item would divide us even more. And like I said, I think you have your, I want my new building and I don't care about anybody else because I'm getting everything new, my renovations, that's all I'm worried about, right? And then all the other things would be viewed as, that can be sacrificial land. Well, those are the things that will come back and bite you too, if you don't have school buses.
What are you doing in Florida?
As far as, we keep all the buildings. We just like to
from pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, and you can see on the handout that I gave you, basically it has been broken out on the back, the growth, because we're considered a bachelor district for renovation, technology, and safety and security, and those are the four major.
They're on the back table.
Those are the four major components, think, of what we collect out, and we don't separate, because again, if you're just going to carry the cost.
Use your website, right? We have electronic news mailouts. Every campus has a news, and we use that. That's what reaches out to the parents. We have a website. After every bond committee meeting, we posted everything that was discussed at that bond meeting, because one of the things we heard was, the public doesn't understand the conversation going on. Well, we posted all that. We posted the minutes. Any kind of spreadsheet that had numbers, we posted it out there. We did lots of fact or fiction because you were very politically correct. But our naysayers just flat out lied. I mean, the crap that they were saying was just crap. And so we needed to get out there and say, no, that is just a flat out lie. And so we had the fact or fiction, and that's what we said. No, this is not what we said. Here's what we're doing, and here's why we're doing it. So again, it's going to be unique on your community, but I can tell you, if you have this oppositional group, you cannot be passive. If you're passive, you will be in the same shoes we were in, and we had a failed bond election. You have to be very aggressive.
Was that fact or fiction website, was it a website on the district website or the bond committee?
No, it was on the website, we have a section jumps out of your fact or fiction, and then we had a bond section that you could go to and pull up and see everything about the bond election. And we did things very similar to Klein, lots of mail offs because of the opposition group.
I just wanted to check, there's always that thing about you can't really tell people how to vote,
What you brought up is a great point, because I'll tell you, when bond elections come up, the biggest thing that hurts you is there's this fear of what you can and can't say by your principals and by everybody else. And when there's that fear, the result is they don't say anything.
Right.
Okay. And one of the things in our failed bond election, that group that was opposing us, every time you got up in front to speak, they had microphones, they had tape recorders. And all they were doing was waiting for you to say one thing, and they were sending it off to the state, mm-hmm. saying, here's a violation. So what that did was that made everybody very nervous, shut down the principals. And it affected us even with our other bond election that eventually passed. So you need to educate and make people very comfortable on what they can say and what they can't say. During school hours, you cannot advocate. You can say fact, and you can say fiction. And you can talk about, here's why we need it. That's not advocating. When you're on your own private time, you're a citizen, you can say whatever the hell you want to say. But don't let them scare you into having these people just shut down, because that's exactly what happened is our principals just shut down. They didn't say anything. And that's something that really needs to be understood and communicated is what you can and can't say and when you can say it.
Right, they gave, like when we've done ours, they've given us, here's what you can, here's what you can do, here's what you can't do. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure where the district provided website, you know, fell on that.
No,
that was under the thing of you can provide information.
Mm-hmm. And we weren't advocating. No, they were saying, here's what it is and here's what. Okay. And we were also saying, here's the fiction that's being told. No, that's not the truth. Here is the truth. And here's why we're doing it.
Right. Well, here's a question that came up
exactly.
That maybe all of you want to know the answer to.
Yeah, exactly. But that's a fear tactic that really snuck up on Katie, and it was very effective.
Oh, y'all have vicious groups, and I know they connected to mine, and connected to like they connected to us.
It's spreading
quickly. We came up on y'all's site, yeah.
Yep, it's spreading quickly. So it's one to be very, very watchful for them, because once they get in, it is an ugly, vicious group.
Go ahead.
I'd like to follow up a little bit. It kind of goes to what Paul was asking about. Mm-hmm. Kind of, you need to understand it as a backdrop to the whole bond process. You need to look at, and each community is going to be a little bit different, but you need to look at a strategy as to, do you want to break it up into components? Do you want to have one big bond? Do you want to provide that choice to your constituents? But on top of that, also the timing of the bond. There's a whole strategy that goes with that. Do you do a May election or you do a fall election? So you have those two periods of time. And then when you look at that and you look at what else is happening, do you have a board election? Because this is going to happen at the same time. Is there a national election like this fall? And oh, by the way, what's the makeup of that national election? I mean, is it going to be a big turnout, which they say will happen this fall? Is that good or is that bad? So as you're going through this, and you know, there's a lot of smarter people than me that work at the strategy and try to put this all together. But the bottom line is, you know, that's one reason we targeted this particular May for this election, because we wanted the INS piece and the bond to pass, because we didn't want it to bump up with asking for an INS bond as well as an MNL increase in the fall. So all that comes together.
One quick. Did you break, how much did you break down your numbers? Because when we did ours the last time, we were kind of fearful to really put a pencil to too much of the how many and exactly the cost, because it was kind of like you didn't want to give too much information, because there's some people, you know, tend to pick it apart. So I noticed this is pretty general with your amounts.
We actually had a spreadsheet that we sent out and gave the committee on the different areas of technology, or the different areas of what is the cost of each campus, what is the renovation, what is the cost of a new campus, what exactly each bus was going to cost, and how many we were going to buy. I mean, there are actually detailed spreadsheets
and your technology too
that we gave out. I mean,
so you didn't worry about
we're going to get it whether you give it to them or not, you know, and are they going to request it? So. It's like, you know, just show it to them. This is what we're doing, and that's what
I've done. One of the things we did was it's all on how you package your numbers, right? One of the things we said was we came up with a dollar amount to retrofit in elementary school, junior high, and high school, and that dollar amount is the same regardless of elementary school you go to. And the reason we justified that is I don't know what I'm going to have to replace when it comes to networking. Until I get in there,
right?
So we feel comfortable with this amount. And so we were comfortable saying, here's the dollar amount, and here's all the campuses we're going to touch with that dollar amount, because they knew it was the same. Where you get into trouble is when you start getting different dollar amounts for different campuses, because then you start having to justify, well, why are you spending more at this campus versus my campus, right? And so we got away from that. We said, there's going to be a generic number for retrofits, because I might not have to replace all my TVs in one campus versus going in and replacing every single one of them. Same with printers, same with all that peripheral stuff out there. So we came up with $1 amount. And network cabling, we did the same thing. We said, look, we know we have some campuses where we've got these three columns that are killing us, and so we're going to have to spend a little bit of money, but we identified those, and we came up with, here's this block amount. So it became less pen to pay or pencil to paper, because it was the same amount. They needed to understand what was going to be involved in that amount and be comfortable with what we're spending. But that's how we did it. So we didn't get into a lot of it.
We said our technology based on initiative package, this is what a package for a classroom costs. The upgrade, this is what it's going to cost. To buy a one-to-one solution for campus or intermediate, this is what the cost is. For high school, this is what the cost is. We gave them the numbers, and they didn't come to do the additional math to figure out what the average cost was. And we had that package out there. Okay. I mean, that seemed to be the most successful.
You don't want it to be 70,000 feet, because then they get frustrated because they're trying to figure out what are you trying to hide from me. Mm-hmm. By the same token, you don't want to go down to ground level, because then you have all the propeller head wannabe technology people out there who are just going to eat your lunch with every figure. And so you want to avoid that. So you're going to have that happy medium, right?
Okay, well, let's move on.
Karen,
let's start with you. You've been talking about this already a little bit. This is what we really face. Putting together is one thing, but how do you address the opposition? What other challenges? You talk about challenges with community or naysayer groups. There may be others. What's some of your biggest obstacles, and how do you address them?
So
some of the campus renovations that we went in the bond, that was some of the obstacles we had. We, on the information technology side, we had some obstacles of parents and community members asking the question more and more. We had a lot of that, and why are we spending the money that's spending on the device? Klein has chosen to use a tablet device instead of a laptop device on our campus. And we've discovered that by using the tablet device, we can use in 95% to 99% of our classrooms, whereas the laptop device can only be able to be used in 50% of our teachers, because we need to know the aspect. But we can use the tablet technology and map the time, the features of the tablet, were more curriculum integrated than a standard laptop would have been for our students. So we had a lot of community members, one, not understanding why we had to provide a device for every student. That's the first issue that we had to go through. Second, why are we doing this at high school? And third, why are we paying so much for this device? First of all, why did we provide it for the students? Well, if you look at the technology long-range plan for the state of Texas, one of their recommendations is this is where we're going. Look at testing that's coming up in the next, by 2011, we're doing all of the course testing online. Research tells us if you're going to test, you better learn. If you're going to test online, you better learn online. You know, those are things that are happening. So we've had our ducks in a row of this is why this is happening in our schools. This is why we're going this route in our schools. Technical support, what are we doing? That's coming out of the local budget. That's not coming out of bond budget. How are we working on the technical support? We had a plan of this is what we're going to do on these campuses. Did we appease everybody? No. Did we bring the parents in for our campuses? For our terminal campus, where students are using one-to-one, on our business campus, where our students are using one-to-one, and the impact that it's made just in student learning, not necessarily our scores, but in the what you're seeing happening in the engaging of the classroom, in the engagement of the curriculum, and the students being engaged in learning. We had parents stand up, that one parent stood up and said at first, it really bothered her that her students were going to have a computer to be able to take it home. She went and visited the campus and saw the classroom, and she was one of our biggest, you know, she would speak at every meeting we had, talk about how much of impact what her student was doing and how her student, she'd see more enthusiasm of her student being in school and things happening and what she's seeing on the campuses. So that was probably one of our IT obstacles that we had to overcome. Why are we paying for students to have computers so they can take home? And we've been, not all wonderful studies laid out, but we've been pretty successful in that with our primary campus and our business campus and deploying it at Condo. That's our next step. And then, you know, curriculum is very important. We've had to make sure that our curriculum talks about how it integrates technology and how technologies use our training. We had two videos made. One was the video of integration of the one-to-one solution and how that's impacted what students are doing. Teachers talking, parents talking, students talking. We also had a video of the technology baseline standards initiative that talked about where we've got the smart board, the electronic whiteboard, where we have the document camera and others, and how that's impacted what students are doing. We showed that in all of our forums. So we did the best that we could to get the information out to the parents. And it got to the point where they're having a hard time almost putting their foot down one mock technology. Because we were able to show that it is making a difference and it is what students are needing. And we would ask them a question, how can the students use it for your own? How is it impacting what they're doing? So that was an obstacle. Our biggest obstacle probably had to do with certain campuses being there or the money that we're spending on a new high school. We're building a brand new high school, we're going to open it up 2011. you know, why are we voting this in high school? What's going on with the economy? I think having the election this past May, with everything going on with the economy, was kind of a scare. So the time of the election is also going to be an obstacle that you're going to have to overcome when you have this election. I think that was one of the things that people are going to do.
We had a group, Americans for Prosperity, and they are a grassroots group that is the one that started. And everybody in this room needs to keep their eye out, because if they start in your community, you have a tiger by the tail.
What is it called?
It's called Americans for Prosperity, and they have spin-off groups that are called the Watchdogs. They're for vouchers, they're for everything against public education. And they are well-funded. They are very politically astute, and so you need to get your arms around that very quickly. And if they are starting to get into your district, your approach to marketing your school district needs to become very aggressive. You need to get out there, and you need to start selling, and you need to not play the passive role that school districts typically have played in the past. You need to be very aggressive, and you need to get out and call a liar, and get on top of it. If not, they will scare your community to the point where they just won't come out and vote. So that was the first thing that we really underestimated in our first bond election that failed, is we knew they were here. We underestimated their influence on our community, and as a result, our bond election failed. So that is just a group.
Can you give some examples of things
that
they do?
They make people, they convince people that you're spending money not wisely. They convince people that bond elections are just a way for school districts to go out and build these Taj Mahals. They really scare people from the standpoint of financial management. And they make the public feel like you're not managing your money. They try and tie back to corporate America. I came from corporate America. I was in oil and gas all the way up until 5 years ago. And so they try and tie that back. You know, in oil companies, you can say, cut your budget by 5%, and they can do it every single year. Why can't school districts? 88% of the school district budget is people, right? So when you say cut 5%, you're talking about cutting people. So are you not going to pay for electricity? Are you not going to pay for fuel? Because that's what's left in that 12% of your budget. Well, that's the things that they don't talk about. Right, they try and say, you guys just don't manage your money, and you play the poor pitiful card, and you're relying on the state, you know, blah, 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 and they just start building this real negative momentum up there. They make people afraid. They make your employees afraid, right? And they jump on any issue. A district our size, there's always things that pop up. And as soon as it does, they were there. You know, they were there saying, well, we're here to help you. The school district stinks, and we're here to align yourself with us. We're going to fix it. You know, and so they were real aggressive in that. So just something to keep your eyes out for, because if they get into your organization and into your community, do not underestimate it, because they are very powerful.
You can Google.
Oh yeah. They put pictures of my house and had insinuations that I was taking money, and I mean it got ugly. They had people talking to my wife. They had people talking to my kids. My daughter came home from school, and they when I say it gets ugly, it gets ugly, all right? I mean, it gets ugly in a quick way. And they do. They put Peyton Walcott. If you've seen the Peyton Walcott website, they are lying to her. And so it is a very, it's an interesting group. So enough said on that.
That's how you really feel.
4 years of this group. The other thing we did in the failed bond election is I think you need to be very cognizant about what you put in your bond package, and is your community aware of it. For instance, we put in digital TVs, LCDs, because we knew the CRTs were going away, right? And we knew that we didn't want to put a bond election out there, and we need to have a plan for it, because I didn't have enough money to go replace every TV in the district. What I wanted to do was start replacing with my new campuses and my retrofit campuses, putting the LCDs in, pulling those old CRTs off, building an inventory, so my other campuses, when they fail, I can put those out there, right? Because within a new LCD is a whole new wiring configuration, a whole new set of things. Well, that quickly became, I want to put high-definition TVs in every campus, right? And that began a life of its own. So when I talk about there were elements that killed that bond election, That was one of them. The other was a flash point. And no matter what we did to get out in front of that and say, no, it's not high definition, it's LCD, the community wasn't willing to listen to that. So I think we were, a couple of things. We were ahead of our time, and we didn't spend enough time making our community aware, look, this is reality. In February of 2009, it goes away, right? So we need to be doing something about that. That was the first thing. So be cognizant if you're putting something that's somewhat bleeding edge, you need to make your community understand why it's there. Otherwise, you'll be accused of doing the, you just want to do things for new things, right? When you can't support it. We made a video. We made a video and talked about the digital learn. And believe it or not, you still have a lot of your parents saying, that's not how I was educated. Well, guess what? That's a good thing, right? That's a good thing. They don't understand how kids learn today, right? They don't understand it. And so we spent time with our bond package talking about the digital learner and how this digital learner needs technology. It isn't a luxury anymore. This is a way of life for them. And if we're going to engage these kids, you need to have technology as a core piece of how they're learning. And we spent time with parents talking to them about it. You know, even though every one of their kids has a cell phone, and you know, you've seen it, they've got an iPod in one ear, a cell phone on the other, and they're doing their homework, and you're thinking, my God, how can you concentrate, right? And yet, that's how they work, right? And so we needed parents to understand it. So we showed that video. That helped to build this case for why we talk about technology. We also now are doing a lot of pilots. We're piloting things, building that momentum. For instance, we're piloting smart rooms. We've got it at a high school. We've got it at two new junior highs. We're going to have it at an elementary school. And we're saying, look, we're testing this out, but when I come to that next bond election and I have that smart board as a line item to put in every campus, I'm going to have every junior high that has them, I'm going to have that high school, and those parents are going to say, these are great. We're going to have the data to show, did it improve student learning? Absolutely, it does, right? So we're going to have this stuff. So do things to build momentum with your community. Again, it's those parents. You get those parents excited about it, they will sell your package. You don't have to do anything. The last thing I would say is, you focus on your brick and mortar. That's what you present, that's what you talk about. Retrofits, life cycle replacement, network. When it comes to all those other technology pieces, you step out of the limelight and you let the C&I get up and talk about why they need it, right? And you get the principals to get up in front of this bond committee and say, here's why you need this, right? Again, who's the people who has the most influence on the community? It's principals. If they're selling and saying this is what they need, that's a very powerful person. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And I'll
ditto
everything
we did. Those are really good points. As a matter of fact, I'm glad I didn't get into the detail of, you know, one of my largest challenges right now is after the bonds pass, I have these groups, in, you know, Apple versus Windows. If I brought that up before the bond passed, this thing would have melted down before it even got to the election. But as it was, our bond committee was so supportive of that. You know, I'm asking for $70 million. I had members on here saying, well, why can't you ask for $80 or $90 million? So, good place to be sometimes.
Enjoy that.
It really didn't push it because I know coming back in probably 2 or 3 years, because this technology is going to have to be a continual kind of thing because it's a short-lived kind of deal. Much to the chagrin of our facilities guys because they're looking at, well, you're taking $70 million that I could have for facilities. There's kind of some interesting internal dynamics. But the challenge is, to go back to one of the big challenges we had in getting support was the whole finance, and we touched on it earlier. You know, why the heck are you spending bond money for something that's going to last 5 years or 6 years? And that's when we had the CFO come in and explain the whole finance, school finance laws here in the state, and it didn't hurt that one of the co-chairmen of the board was the president of Wells Fargo, so he's kind of up there as well. Of course, he was one of the biggest people shooting it down, but after we got through this, you know, he's a money guy, he realized, well, it, you know, it's actually better to put it behind us. Because the other thing is, when some of you are Chapter 41, the Chapter 41 percentages recaptured doesn't apply to your INS sentence. So we're at, in Austin's at 26%. So every M&O cent that gets passed, 26 cents out of every dollar goes to the state, whereas on the INS side, zero goes to the state. So therefore, all the money stays in a community, and you do the numbers, it's actually cheaper to finance, you know, a computer over 20 years than to pay that 26% every year. So so we went through that, and another thing we used to kind of help here was because Austin is new to the technology bond arena. We used to pay all the technology out of M&O, as I said earlier, but you know, when recapture came, our budget got cut, and then, you know, recaps got more and more, our budget got cut down to the bare minimum, and we're down to the state, basically the state allotment, which, you know, $28 a kid doesn't go very far. So what one technique that I used was I just went and surveyed other districts around the state. I didn't use Klein, or, you know, I guess I should have, but I had Northside, I had Sidebear, Round Rock, and some others to show how they're financing technology and how much they're spending per student on technology. So I did some comparison graphs of this is, you know, per year, per student, this is how much Sidebear is spending on technology. You know, by the way, they go out with a technology bond every 2 to 3 years. The history there, Round Rock's doing the same thing. So that, as well as the whole school financing, you can paint a picture and say, hey, you know, this is the way Texas school districts need to finance technology. I mean, there's no other way, I mean, realistically. So that argument carried and got a lot of support there. The other thing was this whole thing about equity. And people are really concerned about equity of how we're going to spend this money to make in an equitable manner across the district, and not just does the poor side get the money, but also it turns out the people on the other side, you know, we want our share too, because it turns out a lot of title money and all that's going to the pretty reduced lunch side, so the perception is they have a lot more. But they have the opposite perception. Well, they have all this PTA money and they have all these donations on the other side. So, you know, and the way I did this was I said, hey, we're going, our EdSpecs is the Bible. And this says exactly what's going to be on each campus. And I can't, you know, manage it any other way but to say, you know, they have this many students, they have this many classrooms of this type, and this is what they're getting. And, oh, by the way, that's how we divvy it up. So I think everybody was sat very well with folks saying we have a blueprint of what needs to be there, and that's what we're going to provide. And if somebody happens to have it right now, then we just put them on a schedule, a refreshment schedule. Okay, you got it, I don't care how you got it, but I'm not going to replace it because it'd be a waste. But 3 years down the road, when it's time for replacement, that just goes in a replacement cycle. Keep it up. So we did, we addressed that issue that way. And the other issue that came up, ironically, was a whole support. Well, you're going to spend all this money on computers. Who's going to maintain them? And, which is an interesting conversation we always have in Austin, because everybody knows we need to spend money on techs and maintenance, but nobody wants to add headcount to do that. So, we address that by saying we're going to build this into the bond pretty much like we heard earlier. Somehow we'll have maintenance built into it. Now, we haven't come up with a final plan whether we do a seat management or whether you know, on-site maintenance or this or that, but somehow we'll build it into the plan. As well as the other issue, kind of like Northside, they have, kind of using that example, they take their tech allotment and pay for tech. Those were, I think, the three largest issues that had to discuss, and I think we answered it very well.
Be very careful if you compare yourself to other school districts on how they spend per student, because you can paint yourself into a box in a real quick hurry. You need to understand what they are including in that calculation. Because when I started to look at this, everybody did it different. And so you've got to be very careful. And if there is an oppositional group in your area, they will jump on those numbers very quick and paint you into the look how much you spend versus everybody else. So not a bad thing to do like Austin did, but make sure you understand what numbers are included in that calculation so that you're comparing apples to apples.
Sure.
So we'll eat your lunch if you don't.
Did any of the three of you use like a TCO study or a BOI study at all ever to justify like the one-to-one or anything? Did that come up as a, you know, in trying to present there was community opposition?
No, we used more of the research about the GIPS programs that are out. That we use that data. We use some of the data that's just been out announced about the one-to-one in different states,
mm-hmm.
and that information for that data.
Okay. Karen, you weren't on the call when I was on with Gray and Kenny, and one of the things I said, like, I could bring some of the research I've been pulling for COSIN on effective use of technology, and they both had, you know, we tend to back away from the research because for every piece of research you can show about effectiveness, somebody can pull out an opposing one, and you get into a dialogue that maybe you don't want to go there. Reactions from you about, did you run into any of that with the research?
Yes, we had people saying, well, you know, you did just one announcement where the technology, one program was found, and you did another announcement, and you know, it was very successful. We tried to use more alarm of where Colin and I's group back in the early 2000s truly did a technology immersion project where they immersed technology in some kindergarten classrooms. And they had someone come research it, and they had some classrooms without immersion, and some with. So Colin has been very proactive in doing a lot of the research himself. So even when we did the business campus, you know, we looked at that campus with one to one. So everything that we've done, we've been able to do in what we call pilots, just like pilots that they're starting to do. So I think the more you can pilot something in your district, and then when you get ready to fund it, you've got data behind you saying, this was successful. We do that a lot. For instance, just to give you a real simple example, iPods being used in the classroom. We hear all of these great things about how iPods help with English, you know, second language learners and those kind of things. But we had a couple of our, one of our intermediate campuses, the English teachers wanted to use the music that you can put on the iPod to help students learn the different novels that they were discussing and how the music related to the novels that they were doing. And so they applied for a grant from our foundation at Klein, and the foundation gave them the money to buy the iPods, to buy the iTunes songs that were related to their curriculum. That is becoming a very successful pilot in our district to do that. So with that happening, now when we get ready to do something with iPods at another level, we've got that data behind us saying that this is what we can do with these
iPods. From your own district.
Exactly. And I remember it's been a number of years ago, but I went to Klein for a technology fair that they had. I was so pretty. The kids were the ones that presented there. The teachers were there, but they were on the sidelines. But the kids were kindergarten age up to high school age that had their little kiosks built, and they were showing how they were using technology. It was very powerful.
And that's what we've done with our one-to-one. The teachers are truly the mentor. They're the guide. Our kids, when we opened the table, you didn't see teachers talking about using those tablets. Kids were walking around with the surveys and Excel spreadsheets. They were interacting with teachers. Kids are the ones that's going to be
Exactly.
So your kids are going to be your sellers. If your kids are using it and your kids are saying what kind of difference it makes with what they're doing, that's where you're going to get that information and that communication. Because then the parents are going to get on board. At Kremel, the parents don't have to pay. We either pay a deposit or they pay a fee to get to use their tablet. It's highly recommended that every student have a tablet. The parents can deny the use of their student to have a tablet in our district. But when the parents deny the student's the use to have a tablet, that child is now not really going to be able to have access immediately to all the resources the other students have. That kind of puts that child at a disadvantage. but it's not required. The kid cannot get their work completed without the tablet. They can do that without the tablet. But those are things that the kids are almost saying, you know what, I need this to use my work. This is my tool. One of the things that one of the parents asked when we employed the 101 at Criminal, they were like, oh my gosh, now I don't have to go buy those books. I don't have to buy those pencils and papers that we had to buy. What's this going to do to my school supplies? I don't have to carry all these other devices around with me. So you've got parents telling one, you know what, this might be a good thing for us. Because then the parent doesn't have to support the device. That's our job, is to support the device. So those are things that we're starting to hear from the parents. Maybe not such a bad deal after all. Might be something that we might have to go in and buy off of and try to feed them.
We use data on the, you know, life cycle of servers, life cycle of PCs. We use it from the manufacturers. That's one time you really use data. The rest of the time we use the public, right? And that goes back to what you were just saying about the momentum. We want the data from our district because that's what it's on. These national surveys and everybody else, for everyone there's four, there's 10 against it, and you'll find that. So getting that public momentum behind those initiatives, that's the power, right? That's the power.
Thanks. You have a question?
Yes, I'm just wondering, and you used quantitative analysis, student performance on the piloting, or any kind of study, maybe using tags, improvement.
We're going to use that with SmartBoard
to justify technology.
We're going to use student performance. I don't know what that's going to look like, but every one of those pilot campuses, they know they're going to have to come back and show data, did it work or didn't. And we're going to use that to either put it on the next bond election or not put it on the next bond election. So that's what we're going to use, the student performance. Absolutely.
I think that probably goes to the accountability piece that the community is probably always looking for, just like in the the private sector where you have to show profit, if you will, for any investment, and I think the community is looking for that kind of profit. What is the value added? I'm wondering if, is that the way you think maybe in the future that schools should be really justifying more of their investment, not in the, if you will, the utility investment, replacement and the basic things, but in the case of the new technology that's being added, do you think that's maybe the way that we should be looking at it?
Yeah, I think, I think it's a player in the future, but I can tell you, because at least in the current time, it's so difficult to get anything that really you can really hang your hat on, that I know in Austin, we just sidestepped the whole issue, and I know we took the easy way out, basically saying, well, we need to make sure every child has a computer when they need it because of all these online tests. I mean, so we kind of blamed it in the state. So we didn't really, couldn't go one-to-one like Klein, but we called what we call virtual one-to-one. We'll have enough mobile carts, enough laptops on campus where we could outfit an entire grade level. Additionally, in the classroom, we really didn't have hard data to support it. When we talk about our classroom in the future, which right now is essentially going to be included in audio system and a projection system, we kind of approached it differently. Like when we're discussing with the board, well, why do you want to put this stuff in there? And then you just kind of throw it back at them. So why do you have your microphone? Why do you have your, because you can communicate that. Well, communication is what it's all about. So we kind of, if you use that analogy, you say, well, in the classroom, having a projection system and having an audio system allows the teacher to communicate better. So, you draw your own inferences, and they seem to go with it. And we did have a couple pilot cases where we put audio systems in campuses, and they make a world of difference as far as teacher perception and what they love. So I know where you're going on that, and I think eventually we're going to have to address that because, and I know probably 2 years down the road when I go for another bond, and they say, well, we just spent $70 million, what happened? So it's going to come up, but right now we kind of sidestepped it, and I think there's an easy argument to make just because of state requirements the obvious that, that so that's how we handle it.
And I know tax quarters are very important, and how tax quarters rate our districts are very important, but sometimes I think we get hung up on those, and we need to also look at what has technology done for our participation, what has it done for your agenda, what has it done for the discipline. You know, those are things that we can measure, those things, but do we collect the data to measure that? We don't. And it's not because we don't want to, it's just sometimes we forget to use those pieces of data that are out there as well. So, just like this morning, the things that the legislature is looking for, those are data that, that's kind of a generic everybody has to have. But if we're going to look at the impact of technology in education, I don't think we need to hang our hat just on test scores. Because the test scores are that one-time snapshot, this is where we're at. We need to be able to hang our hat on what happens on an everyday basis in our classroom, what our kids are doing every day in the classroom, what's happening in our classroom, the engagement of teacher, student, what's happening, where are we seeing those impacts? We have kids doing blogs on our English classrooms are not all reading the same literature at the same time now. They've divided the books, and one classroom may be reading three different books, but the other class period is reading those three different books. And those kids are interacting with each other when they're not in class. What's that impacting? How is that impacting learning? There are things going on that I think we need to figure out. Our test scores are good, and that's what the state has. But what other data can we provide the state that's not just test scores, where we're seeing that improvement for student achievement, student participation, student discipline, student attendance? Those are things, our goal is to get kids in school. That's our goal. If we get them in school, we can teach them. We've got to get them in, we've got to get them engaged.
And
another thing that I think we need
to do. And that's really what I mean, is tying all those performance metrics. I mean, I don't mean just the test.
Yeah.
And but all the metrics you mentioned, that really ties it into a measurable outcome. You know, in business and in the private sector, they have a performer for any investment. They really have to guess on the future, how this investment is going to return, using the metrics they have. One of them, you know, is financial, but they do have market share and other things. And I'm thinking maybe that's what the public would be expecting from us now, that we look at these investments by tying them into those measurable outcomes that can be well-rounded metrics, not just test scores.
I think one of the things, I'll look back to what I said earlier, technology today for the students isn't a luxury, it's a necessity, it's the way they operate. So I think we've even got to go back further, take a step further back, because we're making the assumption that by putting technology in the classroom, you're going to see improvement. I'll argue that you're not going to see improvement, it's the way that they operate, right? So are you expecting to see this quantum leap because you're putting in tools that they're already using on a daily basis? I don't know. But I think our challenge is going back to our community, to our parents, and making them understand this is a whole new world, right? And if your kids, if we want our kids to learn, we have to equip them in the classroom with the tools that are part of their life. Cell phones, iPods, I mean, all of these things need to be incorporated in. And until our community understands that, you're fighting an uphill battle. And I don't know that by putting that technology in, you're going to see this great spike in improvement, because these are tools that are part of their life now. It's like saying, you know, when I was in school, give me a pencil, give me a sharp pencil, and I'm going to do better. I need a pencil to work, right? But if it's sharp or dull, I don't know. But see, and that's what I keep going back to. Our challenge in technology, I think, as the leaders in the departments, are educating our community and get them to buy into this digital learner concept and what it means and what are the tools that their kids have to have, not need, but have to have to be successful. Then you give them these tools and then you start adapting the curriculum, right? Because the tools without the curriculum are not going to do any good. And we can put the tools in, but if the curriculum's not caught up with you, you're not going to see anything. So I think you've got to take a step further back, and it starts with the community. And that's where we're spending our time, talking to the community about this digital learner and what are the tools, right? Go talk to a teacher and say, would you use your cell phone in part of the way that you teach? And most of them would look at you like crazy, but there's school districts out there that they're starting the day with five questions, and they're asking their kids, go text five people and get the answers back to these five questions, and they take those questions and answers, and they go to math, and they do a problem on math. They can go to English, and they do something with English. And oh, by the way, you get extra credit if you can get somebody from overseas to respond to you. That's engaging the digital learner, right? That's engaging them. Talk to a parent about, we're gonna let your kids use cell phones in the class today, and it's part of what we're going to teach. What do you think they say? Are you nuts?
Right?
Yeah. So that's what I'm talking about, right? That's engaging, and that's when you'll start to see success scores improve. That you can look at the data. Okay?
Our time's gone so quickly. I know you join me in saying these three presenters have been great.